Frank Vaughn. It's July 2nd, 2025, and that god-awful noise, which is probably how it lands on most of your ears, is the appropriate soundtrack, at least in my opinion, for the state of our national debt, climbing at over $1,000 a second. $1.379 trillion. Keep that number in mind as we scroll down, and we just have a look at net federal debt in millions of dollars from 1867 to 2020. And we can't blame the liberals for all of this, but we can certainly assess to them and their policies a good chunk of it. But right here, 2015, we note a meteoric rise, and this chart runs out in 2020. If we actually go all the way up to 1.367 or 69 trillion, we're landing up here somewhere. Does this look healthy to you? Now, I don't know who needs a reminder of this, but Donald Trump hasn't been in office most of the time that this chart has been being compiled. It's hard to blame Donald Trump for something that he wasn't even around for. Remember that Donald Trump, for those of you who don't know, leads a nation that is not Canada. He literally is a foreign leader of a different nation that we blame all our problems on because we are filled with psychological ineptitude is what I think is actually going on. Here's another one. Canada, per capita economic growth, laggard for 10 years. There we are, dead last, with 0.5%. That's over the last decade. Donald Trump had nothing to do with this. And so I think when you start to see headlines like this, Canada's economy starts to lose momentum. GDP shrank in April and looks set to fall again in May, setting the quarter up for contraction. That's right, folks. We are steamrolling into a recession. But look at this. A line of trucks wait to cross the Blue Water Bridge border between Sarnia, Ontario, and Port Huron, Michigan. Why did they choose this picture of all the pictures they could have chosen? I'm sure you can guess if you've watched this channel long enough, it's to create the impression that the problem is the United States. Canada has been steamrolling towards an economic and fiscal crisis for a lot longer than Donald Trump has been in office. Scrolling down a little further, let's read the first sentence. The impact of the trade war on Canada's economy was evident in April. I have to ask, what trade war? Most of the tariffs are still suspended that were supposed to be levied. It hasn't even begun yet, as the manufacturing sector registered its largest drop in 4 years. The manufacturing sector in this country has been in a free fall for 30 years. But nobody's noting that. Nobody's educating the public. And worse yet, all the people who gathered together for their Canada Day celebrations and go to the hockey arenas and cheer and boo the national anthem of the United States and do all these things aren't even curious about how we got here. Canada's gross domestic product fell by 0.1% in April, StatsCan said on Friday, falling short of the agency's advance estimate for a small increase in growth. That's another interesting point. The central bankers, including the Federal Reserve in the United States, have all of these prognostications. They have all of these predictions. They talked about transitory inflation. The Federal Reserve basically invented this term that inflation was going to be transitory. It wasn't going to be sticking around. That was years ago. The central bank in Canada said much the same thing. Inflation wasn't transitory. These guys miss, considering they are the masters of the universe and they control the economy, and our current prime minister believes not in God above, but in the God of central banking to be able to solve all of our secular problems. One would reflect or would have cause to reflect on the fact that their prognostications are so often wrong, they don't even know how to predict their own economy. But we have barely even started today, and I've already digressed. April marks the start of a trade war-induced recession that will likely continue through the end of the year. Probably a lot longer than that if Carney doesn't give away the entire country, because all we've done is inflamed tensions with the United States. We haven't exactly tried to fix anything. We've just irritated them all to hell. Now, this trade war-induced recession term, you have a house. That house has been around for 85 years. You've done no maintenance on it. You haven't changed the shingles. The siding blew off in storms and the rain's been pounding on your sheathing. In fact, it's rotted right through to the studs. The entire house is undermined. It's filled with rodents. There's gophers living in your basement. And then all of a sudden, a once-in-a-decade storm comes along and blows your house down. Was it your lack of maintenance on your house? Or was it the storm that induced the collapse? Maybe induction is the right word. Maybe the recession is induced by a trade war that doesn't actually exist yet. But I would think the owner of the house is far more responsible for the damage the house sustained than the storm itself. If he had done his work, if Canada had done their work, we wouldn't be in this situation. Now, we have to start at the bottom of this article. Akshay Kulkarni, an award-winning journalist who worked with CBC British Columbia since 2021. He's based in Vancouver, and he is most interested in data-driven stories. Let's keep that in mind. Let's keep data-driven stories in mind here. As we scroll to the top and see what this is all about, BC farmers lost $457 million in 2024, the most in Canada. And if we scroll down, we see a chart which basically shows the situation is bad for a lot of farms. Now, keep in mind, just put this in the back of your head, that a lot of farms are built on debt. That it, most of them, their books are designed to never make money. So you acquire land and you acquire capital costs that you can then write off against your income so that you can keep your tax bill low. It's called debt-based farming. I couldn't believe it when 15, 20 years ago, I discovered that this is how farms were operating in Ontario. I actually asked the question to one dairy farmer. I said, so you're basically telling me that your model is built on never making a profit, to which he agreed. And I had an experience every single year, because as a farmer, registered as such, even though I was on a smaller scale, I would get called every single year under the threat of fine and arrest. By the way, there was a survey that came out from the federal government. They wanted to know all about how much land you had under cultivation, the things that you grew, and if you made any money. So, of course, me being me, I complied after I asked all the pertinent questions about what happens if I don't comply. I always intended to comply because why not? I answered all their questions. And the lady on the other end of the phone said, I've got a warning window. So it was like this red window that opened up on her screen. And you know what the problem was? I was making money and I was actually paying taxes. And they couldn't fathom that because it was so outside the norm. So they needed additional details trying to understand how I could possibly generate a profit. Now, it was at a lot smaller numbers than big farms are playing with, because I was a market gardener. I was using my own physical labor more than I was using any other labor. We were in the field. We were working like third world serfs, basically, with a few accoutrements. But the fact remained that it was a statistical outlier to actually have somebody reporting making money. So keep that in mind. But British Columbia farmers lost $456 million in 2024, according to StatsCan, with a lobby group saying there are multiple reasons the province's agricultural sector suffered the largest net loss in Canada last year. Basically, it goes on to talk about how the BC Agricultural Council said the cost to find suitable agricultural land is prohibitively high in BC, and the average farmer in the Lower Mainland is carrying millions of dollars in debt. But from there, we start talking about climate change and mitigation and all this stuff related to climate. The whole article is basically consumed with climate change. Now, remember our data-driven, story-obsessed journalist. What's really going on in BC? The land is being bid up by all of the things I've been covering on this channel. You want to talk about data? Let's talk about money laundering in the agricultural sector. Let's talk about money laundering in the greater real estate sector. Let's talk about the rampant crime right here in Canada, the cartel control, running drugs right through our ports with no checking, no inspections. It's free reign, laundering money through our systems and making the price of housing in Vancouver and Toronto and a lot of the metro centers go up and up and up, so that the people who are actually trying to live legally, the people who are working hard and paying taxes, can't afford to actually live. The only people who are winning in this country are criminals and terrorists anymore. But that data doesn't seem to factor in. It's all about climate. Now, what are they talking about? They're talking about an unprecedented heat dome. Do you know what a heat dome is? Another word for it is an entrenched high pressure system. It's a feature. It's happened before. The article likes to pretend that these things don't happen. They've always happened. And then you have weird freezes at weird times of the season that destroy your blooms. These things have always happened. It's called the weather. But what the media has done and what the politicians have done is they've weaponized the weather to people who are basically illiterate of nature. They think that nature is a bunch of trees and deer prancing through the valley, and they don't like to see the part where the coyotes come along and they decide to take down a prey and rip it apart piece by piece. They don't like to talk about the bugs and the reality of being in nature because they're not in nature. Most of these people live in cities. Cities are not natural. Cities eliminate a lot of the problems that humans often encounter in nature. And that's fine. That's wonderful. Live there. But people are making sweeping judgments about the natural world from a perspective of ignorance. They don't actually understand how the natural world works. And unlike me, who has 18 years experience dealing with the cut and thrust of the weather, and during that time reading a plethora of books and literature to understand the past and finding out things like there were summers where there was frost every single month. There are summers where it doesn't rain for months. There were frost-free winters in England in the 1600s. I think it was the 1600s or the 1700s. If that happened today, it would be wall-to-wall headlines about climate change. This stuff always happened. Climate change probably brought down the Roman Empire more than the internal politics. And that's a subject that would warrant its own video. But the Mediterranean, for decades, just started to get drier and drier and drier. And that put pressure on them and forced them to rely more on Egypt and the grain that was coming out of Egypt. Massive internal pressure. And the big problem was the grain dole. The welfare of the grain dole. The people expected to get their free grain. And the grain supply was starting to dry up. And things were getting tough. That happened before we started burning fossil fuels. This stuff has been going on since the dawn of time. Dad had driven my ass. But this segment's about the Canadian economy, and don't fret it, everybody. We've got a central banker who hasn't been in Canada for a long time, and he's here to save the day. Behind him is a glorified army of white knights, 144,000 steeds, which represent the very people who have been running the country into the ground for the past decade, not just the Liberal Party, but the bureaucracy that's united behind protecting their little power fiefdoms, as I noted in yesterday's video, but also just surviving each changing incompetent government. Carney's Bill C-5 will likely make things worse, not better. The first paragraph, the Carney government signature legislation in its first post-election session of Parliament, Bill C-5, known as the Building Canada Act, recently passed the Senate for final approval and is now law. It gives the government unprecedented powers and will likely make Canada even less attractive to investment than it is now, making a bad situation worse. In theory, Bill C-5 will help speed up the approval process for projects deemed to be in the national interest, but the cabinet, and in practical terms, the prime minister, will determine what the national interest is, not the private sector. The bill also allows the cabinet to override existing laws, regulations, and guidelines to facilitate investment and the building of projects such as pipelines, mines, and power transmission lines at a time when Canada is known for not being able to get large projects done. Many are applauding this new approach, and indeed the bill passed with the support of the opposition Conservatives, because Conservatives aren't much of an opposition. They just robbed the provinces of their agency. That's my biggest problem with Bill C-5. The Liberal government has promised to deliver absolutely zero, and in return for their promise, their vague rumors of actually building projects, the Conservatives helped give them C-5, which is a huge consolidation of power in the Liberal government's hands. Like I've said before, government is not parliament. Government is cabinet, government is the prime minister, and government is the all-important governor general signature. That's why the Digital Services Act could be, it's not officially repealed. People have pointed that out. But the government, the prime minister, can go to the governor general and suspend any law that he likes by edict. And eventually it's got to go back to Parliament for a vote where it will be rescinded. Largely, you could expect it to be rescinded because the party whips work. If you don't go along with the Prime Minister's will as a parliamentarian, you get kicked out of caucus and your political career is over. Look at Jody Wilson-Raybould. Look at Jane Philpott. They didn't go along and look what happened to them. They're still out there and they're prospering and God bless them for it. But the fact is their time in politics is over because that's the kind of control of the Prime Minister, which is The prime minister and the cabinet can be better symbolized as representing the internal party structure of the Liberal Party and the elites that back the Liberal Party. The parliamentarians are just window dressing. They're there to rubber stamp whatever the people behind the scenes want. And the people behind the scenes have want C5. And why do they want it? To make sure, this is an attempt, a Trojan horse, as I've said before, to rob the provinces of their agency and force this federation to be held together under the aegis of Ottawa so that Ottawa can decide who we carve up the country and give it away to, because that is what they're good at. That is what they've been doing. Canada is not run for Canadians. If you're just some poor pleb out there trying to do things the right way, paying taxes, trying to live, the Canada that these guys have built has become completely unaffordable for you in most jurisdictions. Now, there are still cheaper places to live. I'm living in one of them right now. But for whatever reason, and there are many, people don't want to just chase cheap housing, even though it exists out here. You might want to consider it if you have conservative values. Saskatchewan's a wonderful place to live. There's really good people here. And you never know. Maybe we'll do something really cool. But C5 is an impediment to that, along with all the other bills I've covered on this channel. They are currently trying to consolidate power in the office of the Prime Minister and the Governor General, and C5 formalizes it, makes it so the decision of the Prime Minister will determine what laws are applied, even though that's already the case, as the Digital Services Act proved that the Prime Minister can suspend whatever law he wants, and the carbon tax. The Canadian government is theater, and I sitting behind a table, signing a fake executive order, and then going over to the Governor General and getting a signature to suspend a law. It's like I am so perplexed constantly that people can sit and honestly pretend that this is a functional democracy. They talk about democracy all the time. Mark Carney yesterday in his Canada Day speech talked about democracy and how we have a proud tradition of democracy and freedom. We don't have any of that. Your rights can be suspended at a whim. You don't have property rights. The laws, with one unelected official's signature, because at the end of the day, it's so funny to me. We have these elections. And people, particularly liberals, are fond of reminding the public that we don't elect our prime ministers. We elect our parliamentarians. And then as soon as the election's done, they say, Carney won the election. Which is it? Do we elect our prime ministers or are they nominated? I'm here to tell you the truth. The prime minister and the governor general are nominated positions. You have no control directly as a citizen over who gets them. And all the power in the Reich is concentrated in their hands. But don't take my word for it. Let's go back to the Fraser Institute. Bill C-5 will not change any of these problematic laws or regulations. It simply will allow the cabinet to choose when and where they're applied. This is cronyism at its worst and opens up the Carney government to significant risks of favoritism and even corruption. Can you see Brookfield managing to take advantage of this new situation? I can't believe the situation in this country is so unreal for somebody who can see it, and the fact that the majority of the public is completely blind to what's going on. Consider firms interested in pursuing large projects. If the bill becomes the law of the land, there won't be a new, better, or more transparent process to follow that improves the general economic environment for all entrepreneurs and businesses. Instead, there will be a cabinet, a Politburo, of politicians with new extraordinary powers that firms can lobby to convince that their project is in the national interest. You ever wonder how politicians end up getting so filthy rich when they're in office? Let's look at C5 as a way to make it really easy to get even richer for politicians. Indeed, according to some reports, some senators are referring to Bill C5 as the trust me law, meaning that because there aren't enough details and guardrails within the legislation, senators who vote in favor are effectively trusting Prime Minister Carney and his cabinet to do the right thing effectively and consistently over time. Consider the ambiguity in the legislation and how it empowers discretionary decisions by the cabinet. According to the legislation, cabinet may consider any factor it considers relevant, including the extent to which the project can strengthen Canada's autonomy, resilience, and security, or provide economic benefits to Canada, or advance the interests of Indigenous people, or contribute to clean growth to meeting Canada's objectives with respect to climate change. You need to understand that these words are designed to sound good, But what they do is create gateways for corrupt politicians and people with malintent to walk through. These people are highly skilled at telling you something is good for you while it destroys your life. And C5 is going to make it easier. And worse yet, C5 will rob the provinces of their agency. And the only thing that's going to save us now, anybody who has any dedication to that seed of Canada that I was talking about in yesterday's video, the only saving grace, the only vehicle we have left in our playbook is the provinces. So your future is being stolen from you, and not just your future, your children's future, your grandchildren's future. It's all being spent for you. We have a virtual dictatorship here in Canada. I don't know how people can't see it. I don't know how people can live in denial of it. The citizen has no power. The parliamentarians have very little power. And the government, even while parliament's not in session, continues to govern with abandon via the signature of the governor general. But hey, we got trans rights being human rights. You know, furries are people too. We have progress. This is the kind of progress they build. By the way, none of this builds anything. This just doesn't stabilize the family. Doesn't create stable economic units. Doesn't create a future. Absolutely depresses the growth in our population. One of the greatest assaults on healthy demographic growth has been the full-scale embracement of hedonism, which they now want to teach to your kids in public school. I shouldn't say they want to. They are teaching your kids perversion in public school. But don't worry, Mark Carney's petting a kitty. This kind of superficial imagery, while the entire country is being sold off and power consolidated in the hands of one unelected official, is exactly the model that any tyrant has ever used to attain power. I'm Frank Vaughn. If you like this work, please consider supporting it via the website, and I'll see you in the next one. Did you know that I have a website? FrankVaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again. And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link in one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.